Hey, everybody, this is Brad Williams, and I am the pastor of B4 Church. Welcome to our podcast. My prayer is that this would help you behold God, that you would see him for who he is, that you would belong to community, that you would be everything that you were created to be, and that you would be able to dream beyond the limitations in your life. So I hope you enjoy this teaching, and we look forward to seeing you in person soon.
Well, hey, everyone. Welcome to the B4 podcast. My name is Alex.
And I'm Ashley.
And today we get to have a really fun conversation about intergenerational relationships.
Yes, we do. We thought it was a nice follow-up to the Kara Powell interview that we did a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Because we touched on that a little bit in that interview, specifically with like teenagers.
Totally.
But it's something that you're passionate about and you've spoken with about with Pastor Keith a couple years ago.
So yeah, we spoke at B4 about it. I've spoken at a couple conferences about this topic too, and some leadership training things. And, you know, a lot of those were tailored to working in and around the church or leadership, but the principles honestly are applicable
to anybody.
In any relationship.
Yeah.
When we think about the term intergenerational, we're talking about people of multiple generations having relationship with one another. I know that sounds crazy.
Yes. Well, and it's very broad.
Yeah.
Because that could be you and your girls have an intergenerational relationship. Me and my great aunt would have an intergenerational, like it's a very broad term.
It is a broad term. It's interesting. In the last, I don't know, couple years in our culture, there has been a highlight of division around racial differences, but something that has sort of been latent for a very long time, in addition to some of those issues, is generational differences and division. You know, 10 years ago, it was really common to hear our generation referred to as the snowflake generation.
Yes, we are millennials.
We are millennials, if you're listening to this and you didn't already know that. And it's just interesting because I'll promise you this, that we did not come up with that title ourselves.
No. Well, and I think people our age sometimes will very disparagingly talk about the boomer generation.
Right.
And just hate on them for what, and neither one is good. And the truth is that there's some truth to the snowflake thing, and there's probably some truth to the disparaging comments about the baby boomers. Yeah. But when we label each other in that way, it keeps us from actually being able to come together.
Yeah, and we've talked about that in many episodes
in
different ways, whether it's theological or racially or socioeconomically. But one of the things I realized we haven't hit on a lot is generationally different. And so I thought, hey, let's have this conversation. It's an important one to have. I mean, even now, generationally, the way we view COVID, according to the data that's out there, is significantly different.
Yes.
And there happens to be frustration.
From all generations.
From all generations.
All the other generations.
About all the other generations. But as a pastor, one of the things that has broken my heart is how many times I've sat down with people in different, like family members from different generations of that family. And because of their differences of views about the world and about COVID in particular, I have heard things like, I will never talk to you again.
Yeah, that's not great.
It breaks my heart. And, and I think so much of, there's a lot to unpack in those. And I've heard this more than once, more than twice, more than 10 times. This has been a common occurrence. But the common denominator often is that we just don't understand how to relate to one another and our differences.
Which, and that's like a human problem.
It's
not
a human
one
problem.
Generation has the problem more than any other. And this isn't a new issue either.
No, this is
since the beginning of time, old people have been disparaging young people and vice versa.
Yeah.
I think it's a little more pronounced in our culture, probably because as culture has shifted, there used to be a little bit more of an implied respect for people who are older.
Yeah.
And I think now the pendulum has kind of swung to whatever is the newest and coolest thing is kind of more respected than things that have been around before.
Yeah.
So that changes the dynamic a little bit, but it's still the same problem.
One of the issues I faced as a young leader in the church for the last almost 15 years is I hear this all the time from the older generation. You don't value us anymore. And so I've kind of been wading into this mess. It's part our culture, part our failed attempts at the church to engage interculturally or intergenerationally, both, actually. And I just thought, hey, let's talk about some of the stuff that we've both learned in this process.
And we're getting to a season two where we probably are going to be maybe in communication or community with some intergenerational members of even our own families.
You mean like family dinner for Thanksgiving or Christmas?
Thanksgiving and Christmas and all the things. We're going to be entering into some of those tensions even around our own tables.
Yeah.
So that's a great place to start with some of these principles. And then hopefully we can help one another to kind of use them in other areas too.
Yeah. And not to repeat ourselves, there's actually some episodes where we have talked about how to disagree well. And we'll just link those in show notes and you can go back and refresh. I think conflict and community is a normal thing.
Those would all be helpful.
Yeah. We want to just talk a little bit about like relationships and the different dynamics.
The uniqueness that comes when you have people from two very different generations who are trying to communicate with one another and what that can look like.
Part of my training in public speaking at one point was to find words that like alliterate or rhyme or end in the same sound. Yes. And so when we were talking about this as an episode, I had done a talk on this before and I had used three words that sound similar.
Yes.
And they create a little bit of a framework for this conversation, but in no way is this going to be as linear as it may sound.
Yes. And these are broad categories and there's a lot of overlap between them.
So don't think of them as a progressive step, A, B, or C. Mm-hmm. Think of them more like a spider web and that they're connected and they come up in like 500 different points of connection. But here are the three words that we got.
What are your three?
The first is mentorship.
Okay.
The second is partnership. And the third is sponsorship. See?
Mentorship.
They all kind of sound similar.
Sponsorship. We got a lot of ships involved in this, but no sailing.
The problem is the ship has sailed and we want it to come back, you know?
Yes. So do you want to define each of those?
Yeah.
A little bit.
I do. Mentorship is a period of time in which a person receives guidance from a mentor.
So that's more of a, when I think of mentorship at least, I like the word guide of like, I'm a person who's wanting to know about something. Like maybe I want to grow in my marriage or my parenting or my job or whatever. So I'm seeking out somebody who's maybe a little bit further ahead of me.
Yeah.
Am I correct in understanding that?
That would. And again, like sometimes we too narrowly define these.
Mm-hmm.
Like in many ways, I am a parent to my four children, but there's an element of providing guidance and direction to them.
Right.
They don't really have a choice, right? Like
this is a forced mentorship.
But this is also a good point that, you know, every relationship is in a different space and place for this. When we talk about, you know, intergenerational relationships, and my kids now don't have a choice. One day they will. And I'm going to have to change how I relate with my children. But in this season, as I'm raising them into young human beings, it's about providing guidance to them and giving them direction. And so I think in a broad category, again, you can apply it as a parent, you can apply it as a coach, as, you know, a friend to somebody who may be a couple generations younger than you, an uncle, an aunt, a grandparent, broad application. But that would be my definition, someone who provides guidance and direction for someone else.
And I like what you're saying about how that relates to your kids, because I think sometimes when we hear the word mentorship, we have like the big brothers and big sisters of America view of there's this very formalized, like,
and it could
I
be
am
that,
your mentee.
Right?
Yeah. And it could be that.
Yeah.
But I personally, I don't think I've ever been in a formal like that mentoring relationship. But I could list a bunch of people. Like my mom has been a mentor on some aspects of my life. Debbie Mills, who's on staff here as our marriage pastor, has been a big mentor to me in other parts of my life, particularly in marriage. That would make sense. But it's not like I have a formal relationship with either of those people where we have our monthly mentor meeting or something. It's just been when I have something going on, I go to those people or they will check on me.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to look like we have a set calendar and we read these books together and whatever. It can look like that.
It can.
But it doesn't have to.
And it's interesting you say that, because I have been approached more times than I can count about creating some program in the church, mentorship program in the church. And I've started some and led some and been a part of some, and not at B4, but in other churches I've worked at. And the truth of the matter is that most of them don't get off the ground.
Yeah.
because they start with a heavily structured format, mm-hmm. but so much of this is about chemistry and relationship mm-hmm. and things in common. And, you know, if it isn't family where this is happening to my kids, regardless if they want yes. to or not, it's an opt-in, opt-out yeah. kind of thing.
Forced mentorship generally does not happen well. It doesn't work well.
And, you know, it's funny because it, in some ways it's like dating.
Yeah, you have to have something in common with the person, yeah. even while you're hoping there's something you want to learn from them too.
Right.
Like if you're on 100% the same level with somebody, I think that's where you enter into more of the partnership, the yeah. mentorship.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, you know, if I'm trying to be mentored by someone whose life is 180 degrees different from mine,
yeah.
we're not going to have a whole lot in common. And yeah. it's going to be hard for me to relate to their yeah. life experiences and them to relate to mine.
Yeah. No, it's interesting, even the language you used, and this is something that I've learned over time, is that, and we'll talk about this, actually, this is the perfect time to talk about this. I call it reverse mentoring.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm mentoring my daughters, say,
mm-hmm.
I better be open to the reality that there are things they're going to teach me too.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, again, in the kingdom of heaven, we talk about power dynamics a lot. Jesus was very interested in exposing power dynamics of the world and flipping them on their heads. He used phrases like, yeah, this is how they do it, but not so with you. So when we talk about these kind of ideas, we have to be willing to flip power dynamics upside down as mm-hmm. well, which means my 6-year-old or my 4-year-old can teach me things. Mm-hmm. My 2-year-old, they can teach me things, mm-hmm. right? That, I have to be open to that. And mm-hmm. so I use that term reverse mentoring. It's like, it's basically humility just to say that I'm not 100%. I've got it all figured out,
mm-hmm.
but I have been 6 before. I have been in the second grade before.
Yes.
There are some things I do know, but I'm going to be open to learning from you too.
Yeah.
I think this is where most intergenerational relationships break down.
Yeah. And that's one of the things I appreciated when we talked to Kara Powell, when she yeah. talked about, we have to be willing to pour into the young people, but we mm-hmm. also have to be willing for them to impact us as well.
Yeah.
And because if we're not, then it's just, nobody likes to be talked down to all the
right.
time. And that's
right.
easily what that turns into.
Yeah.
Instead of a more equal partnership of yeah. everyone shares, everyone listens. One person may have more expertise, so they may do more sharing, and
yeah.
the other person may do
exactly.
more listening.
Yeah.
But if it's only one way, then it's not yeah. really a relationship.
Yeah.
It's a monologue.
I had a question for you.
Yes.
I know that you're like me in this, that when we think about how the gospel works its way into
mm-hmm.
life today, we usually start with the scripture and we look at like, what are the examples that we see
mm-hmm.
there? And then what are the principles we distill from that? And then how do we apply it to our life? Like
mm-hmm.
it's common practice, whatever the issue is. So my question for you is, what is biblical? Like, what are some examples of mentorship-like relationships in the Bible that you can think of? This is off the top of your head.
Yes, it's off
the
top of my head.
So I'm putting you
luckily,
know.
Luckily, I was coming up with at least one answer while you were talking.
Good.
There's actually two that
That's
I can think
I took
of
so long
that
to ask
are
the
really
question.
Obvious. I appreciate that. Because I thought of a second one while you're talking. So there's two that I can think of. And I think the first one is the very Sunday school answer of Jesus.
Yeah.
And we, I think in that episode with Kara Powell and maybe with Joel too, we talked about this, how Jesus actually ask more questions than he ever answered.
300
and I think,
to three.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Jesus would have been a very frustrating person to me because I would have wanted him at some point to actually answer a flipping question.
I can verify that.
Yeah.
Knowing Ashley, I can verify that.
But I think that even though, okay, we have Jesus, who's the Son of God, who's talking yeah. to this ragtag bundle of 12 people, even though he has more expertise and more knowledge than they do, he is often asking them questions and teaching them through their own questions that they're
yes.
asking.
Yes.
So I think that's one really good example. I think the other example that immediately came to my mind was Paul and Timothy, which
yeah.
they're probably the most stereotypical
yeah.
mentoring relationship that people talk about in the Bible. But again, you see that there's that mentoring aspect of it in that
yeah.
Paul writes letters to Timothy and gives him instruction and that kind of a thing. But there's also partnership. Like mm-hmm. Paul sends him off on his own to do things. Paul's not just like looking over his shoulder all the time. I mean, yeah. he's observing from afar and that kind of thing. He's not abandoning Timothy.
Sometimes he's like, but you go.
But yeah, but he's sending him off on his own.
Yeah.
And he's empowering him and saying, you're ready for this. Like you've got what it takes. Don't let people look down on you because you're young. Like I have confidence in you.
That right there, when I was 19, I was asked to start pastoring, which is insane. And I wasn't asked to start pastoring like kids or youth. It was like young adults and other adults in the church.
Yeah.
That was insane. Like, yes. I know 19-year-olds now. Like,
you're like, why did they do that?
I would not, but I'm thankful for it. And I recognize what people were doing. But it's passages like that and that story in and of itself that allowed me to at least take one step into, you know, pastoring people.
Yeah.
And I was terrified. And I bet you did
some really hilarious things.
Not only did I do hilarious things, but people said things to me.
Oh, I bet
that were very hurtful. And you know, just wading through all of that as well is super interesting. Yeah. The one of the examples that I think of in the Bible, it's actually a negative example, is Saul and David.
Mm-hmm.
You know, David needed a father figure in his life. You could just tell by his relationship with Jesse, it wasn't very good.
There were so many kids, you know, there's only so much time. By the time he got to David, they were like, yeah, you're fine.
Right. And you know, their relationship starts in a weird place and then it just deteriorates and gets worse and worse. But one of the interesting dynamics of that whole thing is that you see a young man who desperately wants someone like Saul.
Yeah.
To pour into him, to value him.
Totally open to that.
Totally open
and
to it.
And kept leaving the door open for
and
it.
And did.
How many times?
And Saul had no interest at all.
Yeah. He was too threatened by it.
And I hear this a lot from some of our older folks in the church, and honestly, not just in the church, but I used to visit a senior's pastor when I was 23.
Which I love.
It's a great story.
Please tell us the name of the ministry that you served in, because I think it's hilarious.
It was called Adults Alive.
As opposed to the dead adults.
Yes, they were still alive, even though they were seniors in life. Yeah, I was asked to be the pastor of seniors at 23, which is like...
That's very intergenerational.
Yeah, that's a whole story in and of itself, and it's an interesting one. But I used to visit a retirement facility, you know, assisted living center. And there were a lot of people there who weren't Christians, but they were desperately lonely.
Mm-hmm.
And the common thing I heard is that young people have no interest in us and our stories. And so that's one of the reasons why, like, of all the ministries I led, this one grew.
Like, I can do that.
Because it was actually rather simple. I just showed up and I listened to their stories. I didn't have to say anything profound. And I learned a lot. That story points to a truth that I think is latent and hidden in, but it's very real. And two, younger and older don't know how to communicate this well. We actually do want relationship with each other.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know how to say it. We don't know how to really communicate that well. And then we don't know how to engage with it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's a lot of Davids out there who just want a father figure to show up in their life.
And a lot of Pauls.
A lot of Pauls. There's a lot of Ruth and Naomis.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of these stories where they actually are desperately needed and wanted. And so if you're listening to this and you think that's not true, I have Bible to point to say that it is. And a lot of experience that says that it is as well.
So. All right. So we've kind of covered the mentorship aspect and we've delved a little bit into partnership when we're talking about Paul and Timothy and a few other things. But do you want to define partnership a little bit more?
So partnership is... a pair of people engaged together in the same activity.
That's pretty simple.
Pretty simple. It means we're doing something together.
Yeah.
Someone told me once that there will be a point in time in my life as a father where I'm done raising my kids.
Mm-hmm.
And my role will be to walk alongside of them.
Mm-hmm.
Some sleepless nights, I dream of this day. No.
Like if I can only get there.
No. And again, of course, you're always still there and raising. It's just about, it's more about posture.
Mm-hmm.
Like you go from, you know, the guide in front of to the partner alongside of. And those pictures are important. You know, you keep that thought in your mind that I am now walking alongside of you through this life and I'm here to help you when you need it, but mm-hmm. I will always be here for you when you need it.
Yeah.
And I think that sometimes, especially, you know, especially for our adolescents, like it's hard to know when this time for parents mm-hmm. should be. When does it switch?
When I think of the term partnering, when I think of it outside of like a parenting context, yeah. I think of actually our staff as a fairly good example of this as far as intergenerational partnering.
Sure. But
like even our team, how many people do we have on our team now?
I mean,
like 12.
There's a lot.
I don't know.
A lot.
But we range in age from like 24 or 5 to like 70 something or close yeah. to 70. I hope I'm not misaging anybody.
Yeah, no, we're in the early 70s. Yeah.
But, and everything in between.
There's 50 years of yes, range on our
in
team.
That time. And yep. there is a mentoring aspect. Like, even when I think about Debbie Mills,
yeah.
who I first met doing a marriage or premarital counseling, which was more of a mentorship kind of in yeah. a more formal setting.
Yeah.
But now we often partner on projects and that opens a whole new door to relationship and relating to each yeah. other in a different way. And I think when we're thinking about whether it's work or whether it's serving together or whatever that might be, mm-hmm. I think when we do something together, like we are united to a common purpose, I yeah. think that's where that partnership aspect can be best displayed.
Yeah.
Of we are working towards a common goal. We might be really coming from really different places, but we can work together and learn together as we work together.
Yeah. Let's talk about power dynamics again, because I yes. think this is important. The church is a space where mm-hmm. the rule and reign of Jesus is supposed to be on display.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So there is a way of thinking about partnership, that language and terms from the world and our broader culture and history that can help. But then there's the way of Jesus that provides further ideas and context to this conversation. And if they, and one takes precedence over the other.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in the business world, partnership is when you share leadership, profits, and losses.
Mm-hmm. Like your business partner.
Business partner. And if you are a business leader, you know that you can have a very bad partner.
You can.
Yeah. And that can be detrimental on so many different levels. So I think many people are aware of what a bad partnership could look like.
Mm-hmm.
But what is a good partnership? What does a godly partnership look mm-hmm. like? And one of the things about partnership is that the word shared leadership in the kingdom of heaven is very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about this in the reality that we're not talking about who's better,
mm-hmm.
who's first and who's second, who's mm-hmm. this is where the Jesus' disciples get themselves in trouble a lot.
Yes.
Who's going to sit at your right and your left hand? Which one yep. of us is the greatest? And Jesus spends a lot of time working with them. He's very mm-hmm. patient with them. But, you know, think about this for a second. The creator and sustainer of the entire universe, right?
Mm-hmm.
Decided to share leadership
with a ragtag bundle of 12 misfits.
That's right. And even long before that in the book of Genesis, like God created the world
mm-hmm.
and he shared leadership with Adam and Eve.
Yeah.
Rule and reign. Like, mm-hmm. come on. Like, this is who he is in his DNA.
Mm-hmm.
If he has DNA, I don't, but you know what I mean. Metaphorically speaking. Sorry, God.
Image,
I don't know.
We
if
have
you,
DNA? Does he? I yeah. don't know.
But that is a really important thing for us to wrestle with and grasp mm-hmm. is we live in a culture that likes to elevate one above the other. It's not just our culture. It's every culture since the fall.
Yeah.
You know, male over female or female mm-hmm. over male or, you know, this race over that race or this person or that. And mm-hmm. and Jesus is always leveling. He's always equalizing. Yeah. He's always pulling people up, not pulling people down mm-hmm. to be, but pulling people up. And that's the beautiful thing about partnership. And it kind of leads to this next idea of sponsorship.
Right.
So when I say Jesus pulls people up instead of pushes them down, what I mean by that is that, you know, when Jesus says that the greatest is going to be a servant of all,
mm-hmm.
it's kind of like him saying, like, the greatest act you can do is to make the people around you like your ceiling to be their floor,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense. Like, mm-hmm. and the greatest act of a picture of that is Jesus, Philippians mm-hmm. 2, where he comes down from heaven.
Right.
It's above us, or you know what I'm saying?
It says that, so yeah, we'll go with it.
And he becomes a servant of all so that we may be lifted up.
Yeah.
He didn't have to do that. Like the most powerful person, being yes. the most power. It's the definition of it. And then he does.
Yeah. And so, idea of servant leadership.
Yes. But I feel like that term, it's like overused. Lost its power. No, yeah. I feel like it's just been emptied of its power because we're like, we even sometimes do things like servant leadership to benefit ourselves still.
Yes. It can be used for selfish intent.
Totally. And I think it just feels like it's true. You're right.
Yes.
But there's this, I just love the idea of power under instead of power over.
Mm-hmm.
So it's power under to lift somebody up. Maybe it's to lift up a community in abject poverty.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it's to lift up a group of people that have been not seen, but specifically into these kind of relationships. I think of sponsorship as this idea like, okay, so I've mentored someone, I've walked, mm-hmm. I've poured into them, guided them, then I've walked alongside of them, mm-hmm. but now it's time for them to take my place.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's time for them to get the attention, for them to get the opportunities. And so it's like, I'm going to fade so that you can increase.
Was it that John the Baptist, he must be greater, I've come less?
Yes, he got it, right? Yes. And John had a lot to lose in some ways mm-hmm. of doing that. I think of it in the same way. It's that idea of lifting somebody up, even if that is at the expense of your opportunities,
yeah.
your resources, you know, but for their good and for their benefit. I am here today because people did that.
Yeah.
And people continue to. And their only ask of me is to do the same thing to other people.
Yeah.
But that's what I think. What do you think about sponsorship?
Yeah. Again, I think if we think about biblical examples, I think specifically, I think that Paul and Timothy example, we can very clearly see all of these, that Timothy basically is Paul's shadow for a while. And then, you know, Paul sends him out. Hey, you do this mission over here. I'm going to go to this place. We're partners. We're working together. But eventually the day comes when Paul sends Timothy out on his own. Yeah. And that might be because, hey, I'm about to die. And so I'm not going to be here anymore, but I'm going to make sure that you're set up for success. And I think Jesus has kind of the same trajectory with the disciples and with all of us. So it seems like and again, I don't know that it's always 100% linear, like you said at the beginning of this episode. There's probably a lot of crossover and gray areas between those three things, but the elements seem to be very evident in the biblical text when we see intergenerational relationships.
Yeah.
So I think that means we probably should work to incorporate those into our own lives.
Yeah. As you were talking about Jesus, we were talking about this earlier. Jesus lived within and did ministry within like what is the equivalent of like Banks, Forest Grove, Dundee, Newburgh. Yeah. Like he never in his life, with the exception of his time in Egypt and, you know, but like his ministry was really around that very small mm-hmm. geographical location. Paul, on the other hand, was like in Rome and Athens and Corinth and Thessalonica and like all these different places. So it's just interesting to see how like Paul kind of got to take something beyond mm-hmm. even what Jesus did. That doesn't make him better then. It just means that Jesus, like he did the groundwork, you know?
Yeah. I like what you said about his ceiling being the next person's floor. Yeah. Like, hey, I've basically carried the baton to this point A.
Yep.
I'm hoping that you can carry the baton to point B. Like you're going to get somewhere I didn't go.
Yeah.
You needed me to get to point A,
but
I can't get to point B. That's your call.
Oh my gosh, yeah. So family business, grew up in ground up construction. There's like 75 different processes in ground up construction. But from, you know, the point of excavation and then laying of the foundation, that's hard. Like that's hard work and nobody cares about that work until it doesn't go well, right?
They care about it if it's not working.
They care about it if it doesn't work. But it's like at some point, someone has to come in and do the hard work of excavating and laying a foundation and making sure all the utilities get in there. And then it's the person that always gets all the credit is the one who designs the final product mm-hmm. of the house and what it looks like and the paint colors and all of that. But, you know, one is just as important. It just mm-hmm. doesn't have the same visual look or appeal to it. So I think of sponsorship like accepting the reality that you're excavating and laying mm-hmm. the foundation for someone who's going to come after you and get the credit for it.
Yeah. And I think that's a word of advice too for people like yourself. You said this has happened. So we should definitely make sure that we go out of our way to honor those people.
That's right.
When they've done that for us.
That's right.
Because we don't want to be like the architect. It's like, yes, I designed this great house. Like we want to be the architect that's like, you know what? I did design this great house, but I couldn't have done it without these people over here.
You're absolutely right. Again, this is one of the ways I think the church is a witness to the world around them, because we can do this well in a world that's fearful of either being replaced or not getting enough opportunity. Usually the fear of being replaced comes from the older generation and the younger generation. It's usually not getting the opportunity that they hope for or wanted or dreamed of. And so that fear drives them to make terrible decisions about one another. But again, Jesus says, not so with you. We can be that community that actually sees and values each other and honors one another. Simon Sinek, he wrote a book called The Infinite Game. And one of the things I love about an idea, which by the way, he got this idea from a theologian. I don't even think Simon's a Christian yet. I say yet because I think he's close, but I don't actually know.
He's Jewish, but I can't remember.
But he's, I think he's close. I think he's very, very close. But he got this idea from an actual theologian who wrote a book on game theory. Crazy. But there's this thought that often, like, there's a scarcity of resources available in the world. And that causes us to do all sorts of crazy things towards one another. You know, we'll beg, borrow, and steal. So I have my slice of the pie so that you can't have one. And he sort of introduces an idea and then uses research to back it up that that's like really not true. There can be more from where that came from.
Yeah, we live in a world of abundance, not scarcity, actually.
I think so.
That's how God made it.
I think God made it that way. Yeah. And I think that he desires us to see that if I invest my life, and even if it costs me something, there's more life for you to have. And so I would just encourage anyone listening to this, wherever you may hear some of this, be like, it's not applicable to my work. And I'm like, it is applicable. And yes, it may cost you something in this life, but it is something of greater reward for the life to come. And also, by the way, I've done this before. When you champion and sponsor somebody who doesn't know Jesus, can I tell you that it is an eye opener to them, because no one does that. It's like, why do you care? Why would you do that? You know? So my encouragement is, there is a cost to this, but there's also a great opportunity on the other side of it, however you choose to apply it.
Yeah. And I would say, as we are entering into the holiday season, you might find a person, even within your own family, that you could maybe engage with these ideas with that person. Whether you are younger or older, it doesn't matter. Even if you're like, you know, you and I are in our 30s.
Yeah.
We should probably be engaging with people that are older than us and also younger than us. You probably should have both of that unless you're on the far ends of the spectrum. But I think just making sure that you're guided by prayer in that process is always helpful too, of like, there are seasons that we have with different people, and being open to a new season with a person, but also being open to closing a season with a person if that needs to happen too. So let the Holy Spirit be your guide, and you can enact some of these things in your family or in your workplace or with, you know, other parents or at the PTA or whatever it is. Like these things are applicable in a lot of different places.
Absolutely. One last thought that's come to my mind about how to apply this. Wisdom is the art of skillful living, right? That's the idea here. And it's the ability to take knowledge and then skillfully apply it to one's life. So this is probably the biggest missing thing in our world today. Wisdom, by the way, that's my opinion. I just think we've lost the ability to
think. We're often smart, but we're often not wise.
Right. We have knowledge, but not the wisdom to know how to apply that knowledge. So the worst thing you could do with this information that we've shared is to not see, there's a process that you have to go through to take knowledge, put it through the grinder, and it turn into wisdom, right? But one of the worst things you could do with this is just try to take what we've talked about and slap it onto a relationship and then be like, it's not work. No, there's an art of skillful application here. It needs to be so within your soul that it feels natural that these things are happening. It's not that you're in, like intentionally trying to go through these steps.
Mm-hmm.
It's that it is who you are.
Yes.
And it's an outflow of who you are, that this is how you see younger people and older people and people that have an expertise that's different than yours. And
yeah.
this is how you see other people with value, that they can contribute to you and you can contribute to them. And then that shapes your interactions with them in a positive way. So
yeah.
all that to be said, this is to apply this, it's not as easy as listening to this podcast and then just—
Here's a checklist.
Here's your checklist. Here's five things for a better relationship with your grandson. It's like— It's actually going to take a little bit of time to begin to get to the specificity of that, but this is a good place to start.
Yeah. I think it starts with a mindset shift.
Yeah.
Before you can put things into action. I would also say too, I agree with what you said. It should feel natural and not overly formalized.
Right.
That, however, does not mean that every conversation, especially when you're first starting out,
yeah.
is going to feel supernatural.
That's really, it's the goal. It's the telos. It's where you're trying to get. And you're an amateur, though.
Yes.
If you haven't begun
Give
to do this.
Give yourself permission to be
absolutely.
A beginner.
Yes. It's like learning how to ride a bike. You fall and scrape your knees sometimes. That doesn't mean you stop learning.
Right. If your first interaction is really awkward, that does not mean that you don't have chemistry. It could just mean that you don't know how to talk to each other yet.
That's right.
Just like a first date.
You may not know what TikTok is.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean that you can't
talk. A rotary phone.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so funny when my kids see an old like phone.
Yes.
Like, and they're like, what is this?
Like, I feel old.
No, but you know, again, you're right. Please give yourself grace to work this stuff out, but recognize this is not directions to get to a destination.
Right.
This is wisdom that should shape your heart and your interactions over time and your values. So yes. it's a different kind of thing. It's not like we're typing in the address and letting Siri tell us how to get there. Right? It's about learning these. It's like the Proverbs. It's about learning the wisdom, letting it work through your soul, and then having it come out and be applicable. And you know,
and also noticing the areas maybe in your life where this is already happening, you just haven't labeled it.
That's
that,
right.
And making sure that you're appreciating those relationships and getting all that you can get out of them, but also giving all that you can give in them too.
That's so huge. And if I ever wrote a book, it would be about recognizing how much of our life in Jesus is like our normal life.
Mm-hmm.
And like, this isn't to say to add a whole bunch of new to-dos.
Right.
It's to look at what's right in front of you and to see God is at work in it and partner with him in that work. And so that's really, really good. But yeah.
Perfect. Yeah.
Awesome.
Well, this was fun. We hope you enjoyed this conversation. Hopefully it's helpful to you in the next couple of months as maybe you're interacting with some people in different generations. It'll give you just some things to think about.
Yeah.
Or you could listen to this podcast together and decide what you like and what you don't like. You're free to critique and pick us apart if it brings you together. But we're super thankful you were listening with us today. We hope that you, if you have not already, you will subscribe to the B4 podcast on either Spotify or iTunes. If you are having trouble finding us on either of those platforms so that you can subscribe, you can always look in the show notes and we will include a link to exactly where you need to go to subscribe. Don't forget, if you subscribe, you not only get this conversational podcast on Tuesdays, you additionally get our weekly liturgy podcast on Thursdays and our weekly teaching podcast, which comes out on Mondays. We will see you guys next week for a conversation with Pastor Brad. So get excited for that.